Let us begin with a tribe of people residing high in the Andes Mountains, where the brisk air is thin and vistas are arrestingly clear. We'll call them the Phoenicians. They are a small and in many ways unexceptional community, subsisting mostly on boiled potatoes and pickled turnips and a mild rhubarb brandy. Days roll by, decades pass, marked chiefly by a gratified uneventfulness. The Phoenicians are remarkable in only one aspect, really. They are far and away the finest readers of poetry in the world. They hear things the rest of us don't hear. The question this book poses is, what can you, whether you live in New York or London, in Johannesburg or Jakarta, in a tidal shack or a yurt or a submarine or a castle, learn from the Phoenicians? Plenty, I think. In their modest but dizzying excellence, the Phoenicians instruct and enlighten us about our limitations as readers and thinkers. Perhaps all art is an expression of human restlessness against our bodily confines and of our adaptations within them. Perhaps every art form is an arena for measuring the mettle of our physiological and mental capabilities. Even so, poetry, like its sister arts, music and architecture, is a medium that constantly brings this testing into sharp relief with pointed and poignant models. Let's open with a valedictory poem by Dylan Thomas, Prologue, completed in 1952, shortly before his death. Thomas himself did not suspect it, but at his close, he was writing for the Phoenicians. Prologue initially appears to lack a rhyme scheme. You have to reach the poem's exact midpoint, lines 51 and 52, to meet your first rhyme, a couplet. Sheep white hollow farms, to whales in my arms. From here on out, the rhymes unfold punctually, systematically. The next line, line 53, turns out to rhyme with line 50, and line 54 with 49, and so forth, each later line finding its earlier coordinated partner, until finally, the second-to-last line rhymes with the poem's second line, and its final line with its first. Everything's neatly paired. Prologue is a wildly eccentric construction. Thomas built it mostly for himself, I suppose. Poets are forever erecting self-imposed obstacles that the general reader is unlikely to appreciate, or perhaps even notice. For an ordinary reader, Prologue offers a peculiar experience. If it comes across as an unrhymed poem for most of its length, there's a fleeting middle interlude, beginning with line 52, when something else occurs. You hear the rhymes chiming away, creating an ever-dwindling music. Depending on your ear, you may hear the rhymes for 4 or 6 lines, 8, 10, maybe 12, but no one is going to hear all 51 of them. No one except a Phoenician. To hold inside their brains, in order, 51 rhymes? Why, it's a piece of cake for the Phoenicians. Let's assume that, as a little joke, Thomas had created a random and minuscule disorder. The rhyme that was supposed to fall at line 89, linked to line 14, actually fell at line 88. You and I would never notice. But the Phoenician reader's eyebrows would lift, followed by a slight but unmistakably quizzical shaking of the head. What is he doing? Our Phoenician wonders. The rhymes are out of whack.